Welcome to the Sports Scouting Report Podcast with Lee Brekeen.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lee Brekeen. You're listening to the Sports Scouting Report. I've got a very special guest today, and that's former LSU head coach Dale Brown, who's joining me. Dale, thank you for taking time in your crazy schedule to be a part of our show today.
Lee, it's my pleasure, and good dog and fiend dagger dog, and do you know what that means?
No.
You grew up in North Dakota, you would. That's Norwegian. Good day, fine day today. I'm not Norwegian, but my wife is.
I've got to remember that. That's a good one.
Good dog and fiend dagger dog.
That's kind of like people saying, what is Boudin in Louisiana, right, to somebody in Minnesota? You know, that'd be...
It's funny you bring that up. One of my former players told me this past year. He said, Coach, no disrespect, but when you first came here, he said, we need practice and we need shower. What is he talking about? We couldn't understand your accent. He said, and then you would use things like, you betcha, doggone it. And he said, was that North Dakota? That was North Dakota.
When I was living in Philadelphia, Coach, I didn't have the money to go to college, you know, and my mom raised me, you know, very similar to your upbringing. Uh-huh. And my mom looked at me. She said, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, Mom, I guess I got to get a job and I help you and help me. I said, well, I was offered to build tennis courts. And my first job was Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Coach. And I go to Philly.
Oh, my God.
I've never left Louisiana in my life.
Wow. You had more guts than me. I didn't have enough courage at that time, 17-year-old out of high school. University of North Dakota had offered me a scholarship, and I had a chance to go to Loyola, Chicago, or Marquette. They had a scholarship for poor people, and the doctor and mine had arranged it for me. So I went down to my visit at the University of North Dakota, which is down in the eastern part of the state where Lute Olson grew up. I was so intimidated. I stayed in a frat, you know, and they all had cars and suits. I walked around the campus, and I thought, I was 17 years old, and I was poor and didn't have anything. I couldn't wait to get out of there and get back to Minot, North Dakota, and sign at little old Minot State Teachers College of 500. Mm. So you had much more courage than me.
Yeah, and I remember in Philly, I was, you know, asking for, you know, speaking of the language that changes, you know, being from the South.
Yeah.
I was getting a snowball, and I went up to, I'll never forget this, I was in Philadelphia, and I said, can I get a snowball? He said, what do you mean, Italian ice? I said, yes, sir. I said, is that what it's called in Philly? He said, yeah, it's Italian ice. He said, what's a snowball? He said, you want it to snow? so that's when I knew I was out of the South. But, Coach, growing up in where you're from, you know, it was cold, obviously. And people in the South always would probably want to ask you this or anybody, but did you ever get used to how cold it was?
Never got used to it, but let me tell you how tough people are. Now, this is not embellished a centimeter, but we never had any vehicle or anything like that ever. The first car I ever got when I went out to coach, I bought a $300 used car to drive to the school I was going to coach at.
Wow.
But in the middle of the winter, week after week after week, 35 below zero was nothing.
Oh,
my
on.
Wife has a picture. She lived right on the Canadian border, a couple miles from the Canadian border, near the Montana-Canadian border. Mm. And they lived in a two-story house. And it shows her standing out on a snowbank. She was on the second floor of her bedroom, standing on a snowbank coming up to her room. But I remember calling my sister. I was driving to LSU one day, and it said, well, the coldest spot in the nation today is in Minot, North Dakota, 52 below zero.
Cool.
And that's not wind chill, folks.
Wow.
How would you like to be in North Dakota? I sure wouldn't. So I got home that night, and I called my sister. I didn't tell her I saw the show. She's now 92 years old.
Oh, God bless her.
And I said, how's it going, sis? It's going good. And I said, how's the weather in North Dakota? Oh, it's real nice. I said, it's real nice? I said, I just heard on public radio that the coldest spot in America is 52 below zero. Yeah, but she said the wind's not blowing, so I went out and shot, had my hair done. They just adjust to it, but it is really brutal. And beyond the cold, that's bad enough, but there's a constant wind blowing from Alaska or wherever it's coming from, North Pole.
Yeah, Santa Claus. Coach, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, I want to ask you about Bill Walton, and also we'll talk about the NCAA, the Governing Board of College Athletics. Get your thoughts on it. I know you've written about it, and there's always been issues with the NCAA, and then you have COVID-19 that you had sent me something the other day about how it's really woken up things that have been on the table really to fix over many years since you were a coach for 25 years at LSU. But we'll be right back. You're listening to Dale Brown, our guest, and I'm your host, Lee Burkeen. We'll be right back. Listen, whatever you're driving right now, Tommy Harvey wants it. Bring it in to Harvey Subaru, Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City, or John Harvey Toyota. They're paying big bucks for all trades right now. They'll cut you a check right there. Tell them Lee sent you. Welcome back. You're listening to the Sports Scouting Report. I'm Lee Burkeen. I'm honored to have our guest, Dale Brown, former LSU head basketball coach. Really great person. Thank you, Coach, for joining us today. Look, Bill Walton, I watch a lot of these late-night basketball games, and I'm a basketball – people think I'm a football guy, but I love basketball too. And I was just short growing up. I shot basketball more than I actually played football.
Hold on now. How short – what do you call short?
Oh, I'm basketball short. I'm, 5'8", 5'9".
All right. I'm going to ball you out, Mr. Lee.
Okay.
When you say short, the greatest athletes in the world are considered decathlon because they can do it all. Sprints, distance, jumping, pole vaulting, shot put. So they're considered the greatest all-around athletes. Since the Olympics have been started, the gold medal winner in the decathlon, his average size is 5'9". 175 pounds.
Wow.
You're not small.
Well, it makes me, before I forget, let me throw this name out to you. Here's a name that you're going to love, Coach. It's an old basketball name. Speaking of a short basketball player, Spud Webb.
Yep. I can still see him dunking.
And he was 5'7", I think.
Was he even that big?
Might have been 5'6".
I thought he was 5'5". But we'll get the middle here. He's 5'5", 5'7". But
was he a great player, Coach? He was a phenomenal player.
He sure was, and faster than a speeding bullet too.
A lot of he was a great one. And then speaking of Bill Walton again, what do you think of Bill? I mean, one of his sons played for you, and you were really good friends with the late John Wooden, and obviously you know Bill. But what do you think? He's getting a lot of criticism about his his color as for doing basketball games. He talks a lot of non-basketball during a game. I actually like the guy. I think he's super smart. But what's your take on Bill Walton?
Well, I'm very, very prejudiced because I've known Bill for years, and his son played for me, as you well know, and he's highly intelligent. Of course, I was around him. John Wooden adored Bill Walton, and they had their run-ins at first, but Bill soon adjusted. But many of my friends will say, "That Walton, I can't stand to listen to him. He's a shut up one." I fully understand that. But Bill is highly intellectual. He gets bored easily. And in the course of a game, he elaborates on stuff that a lot of people don't even know what he's talking about. So I'm a poor person to ask that, because if you know him personally like I do, he couldn't have a sweeter wife. He's raised a great family. He's really a genuine. A lot of people think he's arrogant. He's really a loving, kind, and shy guy. And I think if you ever read his book, I think you get another imprint on him. But John Wooden used to tell me, no, my wife, we were in Cabo San Lucas at a international convention.
Okay.
Speaking, John Wooden and I. We went to dinner that night, and my wife said, "Coach Wooden," she said, "does anybody bother you as much as my husband?" She says, "He's out here visiting with me. He talks to you on the telephone." She said, "Anybody else?" She said, "Well," he said, "yeah, I think he's got some competition." Bill Walton would probably be number one, and Dale would be number two. But I would be at John's house sometimes for 3-4 days, meet him in the morning at breakfast, and stay late at night. Every day, Bill Walton called, how's my coach? And they talked, and he's highly intellectual, but I understand where people are coming from. In fact, some of the announcers are so bad sometimes on different channels, I turn the sound off and just watch the basketball game. It's disruptive to watch it.
Yeah. And coach, I want to, Bill Walton is perfect for 11 o'clock basketball in the South. I mean, for 11 o'clock at night, it's late. And,
yeah.
And like you said, he brings, I think people tune in just to hear him, even if they don't like him. He's different. He talks about 18 different topics at one time. Like you said, he's a,
no, I know.
He's a smart
yeah,
guy.
I kind of enjoy it. He's not a scatterbrain. He just gets bored, and sometimes the games are boring. But in the history of basketball, worldwide, the two best passers in the history of the game from the post were Bill Walton and Arvydas Sabonis. And I brought him here to work with Shaquille, and I also brought Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to work with him because Shaquille didn't have a jump shot. He didn't have really inside moves. You know, he could just dominate and dunk, and, which was certainly great in itself. But after we did that, then the wonderful NCAA decided that they would make that illegal. You couldn't bring people in to help coach your kids. And I never, you know, I'm 6'3", so you have a 7-footer. You're teaching him different moves. Well, you know, I didn't play center. I played a forward my whole life in high school and in college. So bringing them in to try to help him with parts of the game he didn't have, they then developed a rule. It's whether or not they made the name of it. It's a Walton rule. You can't bring players in and help them help your guys, which is insanity. Just one of the many insane things they do.
And, Coach, before we take a break, I remember going to your camp as a kid, and you had Kyle Macy in town from Kentucky. And
oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
And I never forgot that because I was a big Kyle Macy fan as a kid. And he was a great free throw shooter, as you know. And he was coming in showing the kids how to shoot free throws at your camp. And I'll never forget that, you know, what it does to a young man or a young girl to see these people, that these famous people work with you and teach you. And but, yeah, I mean, it just destroys the impact of being able to do something that I think is right. But we're going to
amazing you bring that up. When I was growing up in North Dakota, you never saw any stars, you know, suck up there. Hardly anybody's ever been to North Dakota. Nobody even knows the capital. If they do, they can't spell it. And I used to dream about, oh, it'd be so nice to meet some of those people. Mm-hmm. So I know exactly your feeling, even though I didn't have the opportunity to do it. And that's why I tried to expose the kids to the best in the business, from Carl Lewis to you name it.
Coach, we'll take a break. And speaking of the NCAA, when we come back, I want to get your thoughts because you had sent me some stuff on the first employee of the NCAA was Walter Byers in 1951. First full-time employee, and we'll talk about some things I think they need to change and get your thoughts because you've written about it, and I think people would love to hear that from you, Coach. We'll be right back. Looking for a used car? Harvey Autos has three dealerships, which means three times the used vehicles. They've got everything from fuel-efficient compacts to luxury models, even hybrids, and certified pre-owned with a warranty. Check out John Harvey Toyota, Harvey Subaru, or Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City. Welcome back. You're listening to the Sports Scouting Report. I'm your host, Lee Burkine. Our guest is legendary Dale Brown, former LSU basketball coach. And, Coach, the NCAA, they just don't seem to have it right. They just, you know, and I'll give you and share my thoughts just on the football side and sports in general with scholarships and what's legal, how do you transfer, do you have to sit out? And it just seems like there's nothing currently that I think works. I think everything is just kind of open and it's a big circus. And what is your thoughts on the NCAA going back to their 1951 history to the current state we're in?
I will be happy to answer that. I don't want to embarrass you now. I hope you don't get this wrong. But what NCAA, what does that mean? Name what that is.
I don't know, Coach.
Well, I mean, what is it called? National Collegiate Athletic Association? Is that what it stands for?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it doesn't. That's what they think it stands for, but it stands for not caring about athletes. That's the NCAA, and they don't want to hear that. Frank DeFord, now the deceased great sports writer, Sports Illustrated, he summed it up pretty simple. He said, the largest legal cartel in the world is the NCAA. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to be criticized. Now, let me give you some analogies why I despise what the NCAA has done over the years. Have they improved? Yes, because of pressure. These are the best analogies that I can give you. Everybody, oh, amateur athletics, that's the biggest joke. That's a joke that amateur athletics and coaches are making $10 million a year coaching. That's not just football. Basketball coaches, too. The money that they get, the billions of dollars the NCAA makes, that's an absolute con job. A great number of these children, young men that come here, 50% didn't have fathers raising them. They had nothing. No clothes. Some of them did. They came in battered tennis shoes. They didn't have dress shoes. They didn't have anything. They didn't even have money to go eat on the weekends if the dorm was closed. So it's been a big con job. But what really stimulated me, Lee, was had nothing to do with money. It had to do with common sense. I began to figure out, you know what the NCAA is really good at, and I really good at? Legislating against human dignity and practicing monumental hypocrisy. Let me give you the two, and I can give you a litany of them, but let me give you the two that turned me on. In the 1980-81, we were in Alaska, the Alaskan shootout. I took bed check, and one of my guards from St. Louis, who transferred from St. Louis University, Mark Elkhorn, I went in his room. He was in bed, and he looked almost, his skin looked jaunty, jaundiced almost. I said, well, what's wrong, Mark? Oh, Coach, I'm so sick. He said, I got this pain in my side down here and stomach. And I said, well, you're not going to play tomorrow. Yeah, I'm not saying I am. No, you're not until we get you home. Well, when we got home from the shootout, we found out he was loaded with testicular cancer. Mm. So his mother and father had to come and bring him to St. Louis for treatment and get him home. Well, when they got there, they found out that he had this bad cancer, testicular cancer, and he probably wouldn't make it. So time went on, and he'd been to MD Anderson and the best places he could go. Well, the mother called me, and she said that they're having a fundraiser in St. Louis, and she said, we went in to see Mark. She said, we were telling him about it. He's so excited about it. So she said, well, Mark, she said, you know you probably don't have much time. What's your last wish? He said, Mama, I'd love to see my three best friends on the team. Joe Costello, Jay Brian Bajorin, and Andy Campbell. And she said, they're having a fundraiser for us. She said, we have so many debts from going back to MD Anderson and those. And she said, would you come and Could you be able to help us get them there? I said, absolutely, we'll be there. You give me the information, and we'll be there. So I had a situation that I thought, how am I going to get them there? We found out the governor said we could take his airplane free of charge. So I said, that'd be great. Well, I thought, you know what? I've been so vociferous against the NCAA. They would love to prove me to be an Elmer Gantry. I better just call the NCAA and make sure it's okay, but I'm sure it will be. So I called the NCAA and I explained the situation to them. I said, this young man's dying of cancer. And his mother called and no cost, LSU. The governor's going to let us use the airplane. So that's legal, isn't it? Absolutely not. Turn to page such and such. And he used this analogy, whatever page it was. I think the book was about 500 pages at that time. Whatever page he told me to turn to, he said, that would be considered entertainment off campus. You can't take a player so many miles. I said, hold on. Did you understand what I said? He's dying. He said, well, you can't take him there. So I hung up and I said, I've got to get them there. How am I going to do this? I was not going to disappoint that woman, and they didn't have money. So I found out there was a red-eye flight, and there was also a cheap hotel near the airport. So I got all the deals, and at that time, to show you how prices have changed, it was $300 for each kid to fly. Mm. So I took $300 and each put them in envelopes, and I told the kids after practice, I'd set them 15 minutes apart. These three kids come to my office. I need to talk to you. So I brought them to my office, and I gave each of them the envelope, the information. Here, you got to call, get your own flight. You got to call, get your own room reservation. I'm breaking an NCAA rule. And I had the blinds closed, and I only brought one in at a time so they wouldn't see each other and have to turn each other in if something came up. And it just made me sick to the stomach. Well, I got there, and it was time for me to get up and speak. And I thought, this is really ridiculous. So before I started, I said, Mark Elkhorn's three best friends are here. I said, Jay Brian Bashan, would you stand up? Andy Campbell, would you stand up? Joe Costello, would you stand up? They all three stood up. I said, they're here out of their love to their teammates sitting here at this head table. And I said, I've got them here illegally. I paid their way to come here. Just challenging. If I lost my job over it, I would accept. Well, the NCAA wouldn't do anything about it. And it's amazing because I was so anti-NCAA. Well, then about 7 years go by, and I recruit a player from Argentina, one of the best big men I've ever seen. He can play every position, from point guard to wing to center. His name was about 6'9", Hernan Montenegro.
Yeah.
He came here with his wife and a two-year-old son. We were about four games into the basketball season, and I get a call from the doctor's office. He says, Coach, we got a problem, he said. And Hernan and his wife had a two-year-old daughter. And he said, Mrs. Montenegro is here with her husband. And he says, she's pregnant, and the baby's breached, and the cord's going to wrap around his neck. And he says, I got to get that baby out. The baby will die, or the wife could die. But he said, the problem, they don't have any insurance. They're foreign people. Mm. And I said, well, can you do anything about it? He said, no, I can't do it, you know. And I said, well, can you give me an idea what it would cost for hospitalization and whatever? To give you an idea how prices change. And I think he gave me a number, approximately $7,500. So I called the NCAA again the second time, and I said, the wife's health is in danger, and I said also, the child's in danger, and I said, it's $7,500 to get the operation. So I called the bank, and they said I could go down and co-sign a note with him. He'll play professionally, I said, either in the NBA or in Europe or someplace. Mm-hmm. So can I go co-sign a note with him? They said, nope, that's illegal. I said, did you hear what I said? The wife or the baby could die? I'm sorry, I hung up on him. I then thought, now I got to be really cautious here. I spread my luck too thin with Mark Elkhorn, now this, and they'd like to shut my big mouth up. So I called a friend of mine that's not an agent for sports. He represents musicians, like Wynton Marsalis and others like him. And I've known him for years, and I said, would you come down and represent him? And I said, he's going to have to lose his eligibility and drop out of school and everything, mm-hmm. but would you mind doing that? He said, I'll do it. He came down, he gave him the money for the hospital or whatever. We had to declare him ineligible. And he did get drafted, I think, Philadelphia, and became a great player. So just a lack of passion, compassion. And it isn't that the funds aren't there. The funds are there. Look at the facilities they're building. Look at the money the coaches are making. Look at the money that the NCAA makes, billions of dollars. I believe Mark Emmert, I believe his salary now, and he's done probably more to try to make change than anybody I know in that position. I think it's about $4 million a year. So it's just an organization that is out of time. Now, Walter Byers, who was the longest executive in the NCAA for 36 years, after he retired, he wrote a book called Unsportsmanlike Conduct. And in the book, he admitted the NCAA is totally wrong. It can no longer be run the way it's being run. It's a disservice to young people. And they have made some improvements. But once you get on their bad side, the situation with Lester Earl, that was just nothing but trying to shut up that loudmouth in Rouge Dale Brown. That was all lies they made up. It's on tape recordings. I had the tape recording. I gave one of them to Mark Emmert after he got there. It certainly wasn't his fault about how they operated. This is an investigative guy. I think his name, I'm one of two guys, so I won't give a name because I'm not 100% sure to look it up. But the guy that was investigating him, they never used to have to tape him. And I used to say, well, they're just saying somebody said that. There's no evidence. Well, it's in their notes. So finally, they changed the rule, and they made it you have to tape record it. So I listened to the tape recorder, and the guy asked Lester Earl this. He said this, quote, he said, Lester, he said, he said, if Dale Brown's creating a lot of problems for you, he won't release you, so you're going to you have to sit out, you're going to lose a year, you're going to lose eligibility up here. So he says, if you can give us any dirt on Dale Brown, any dirt, he said, you can forget anything that was done illegally. You can keep the money they gave you, whatever happened. He said, and you will not lose any eligibility. We'll get you eligible immediately. Lester Earl said to him, well, Coach Brown really never really had anything to do with recruiting. And like the Nixon tapes, you can hear the tape recorder go off. Then you can hear it come back on. And the investigator says, I believe it was Doug Johnson. I believe Gary Crawford or Doug Johnson. The investigator comes back on. He said, well, you know, Lester, like I said, if you can give us anything on Dale Brown, you'll be cleared to play. Now, think it over. Now with the tape, there was one. He said, when he came to my house, he said, he offered my mother and I a new house if I go to LSU. First of all, I've never been to his house. I never met his mother until after he signed up, I believe. And he was always going to kind of come. Everybody wanted him, but he was a local kid. He'd hang out at practice. And then Lester, years later, as you know, did apologize to LSU and state of Louisiana and myself and Johnny Jones that he lied. He was a young teenager, and I was intimidated, manipulated, and encouraged to lie.
Coach, let me ask you this. Speaking of college basketball programs, you know, obviously UNC has had a great, you know, history in Duke and, you know, Kansas and Kentucky, you know, the Blue Bloods, right? There's a conspiracy theory among fans and alumni, and you know, a lot of people think, are those guys untouchable from the NCAA? What is your opinion on that? I mean, it just seems like they recruit all these big-time players too. And, it just seems like those programs are just, there's nothing going on with those programs.
The fans are exactly right. There are the sacred lambs. There are the sacred images that they let things slide. And I don't want to indict anybody, those pointing one finger at somebody.
Right, right.
Have three pointing back at themselves. But I know incidents where they're kind of, they got the sacred cloth around them and they got the halo on their head. But anybody that's vociferous or against the NCAA, which I was and several other people were, there's no question. And being in the bios, we're just a bunch of hicks down here, man. We ain't some of them big time. You know, I think Louisiana gets a bad rap, and I don't think there's any question about it. Now, whether that still goes on, I cannot speak for right now. You know, right now at this particular spot, but I do know when I was coaching, and I do know incidents after I got out of coaching. And I know incidents of us losing kids to schools that had the reputation of Mr. Purity or Mr. Clean.
Right, right.
That blood did cheat. So they say, who cheats? The biggest cheaters of all are the NCAA.
Yeah, because there's a lot of fans that feel like they make examples of some programs, and then they back off of the ones they have, and then they just, you know, make examples of certain programs.
At the end of Walter Byers' career, I got a telephone call from him, and he asked me to write a foreword in his book or something, and he also wrote me the nicest letter about it. He always appreciated my candor and et cetera. And he just totally changed in old age after he saw the injustices. I never personally did meet him, though, just by telephone and letter.
Yeah. Coach, you know, speaking of scholarships, when you were the head coach at LSU for many 25 years, what was your thoughts on scholarships? Was 14, 15 kids enough for a basketball team? And, you know, was there enough walk-ons? Because they're very tight on walk-ons in basketball. You can't have but a couple of walk-ons, maybe three. But why do they limit the walk-ons?
Well, walk-ons shouldn't be limited if you want to have a battalion of them.
Right.
But, no, I thought we had more than enough scholarships. I thought we had more than enough coaches. Now I see nine guys dressed in suits that are coaches or assistants, or et cetera.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. So, no, the scholarships were more than, you know, more than enough. But walk-ons, if you want to have 20 walk-ons, give them a chance. I tried every year to get a kid, the student body, to give them a chance. And not necessarily they were going to help our program, but many of them did, by the way. One or two of them wound up being on scholarship. So, I think the NCAA, I guess if you said in a nutshell, and it's hard for me to say hello unless that takes an hour for me to say hello to you.
Right.
But in a nutshell, I would say the NCAA has come millions of miles, millions of miles. I sent in 43 suggestions to them about rules that should be changed. Look, there's a Maverick. I think, didn't I send you a copy of them?
Yes. Yes, there was a lot of them. So.
And I think 30, 35 of them have been changed. But the NCAA is, I would describe them as they've come a million miles since I coached. However, they have light years to go, and light travels 186,000 miles a second.
And I'm so like, coach, but I'm also...
improvement.
I'm like you, though, since COVID-19, since we've had shutdowns with the world, you know, the NCAA's got to, you know, go back and have meetings about, okay, if this happens again, or how long are we going to be in this still, there's got to be some rules bent a little bit, right? I mean, like what we're talking about, kids are not going home right now because of COVID. They don't have families with money. Families, they're losing jobs. Their mom and dads are losing jobs, okay? They don't even have money, like you said, to give them while they're at LSU.
Lee, let me give you what you just hit there. You just hit something else. You're the coach at LSU, Duke, wherever, Kentucky, wherever you're the coach. You came from a single home of a mother. You're here, and your mother is in New York or California. Either one of the coasts.
Mm-hmm.
She died. And your sister would love you to come home for your mother's funeral. And the NCAA won't pay their way. Would you pay their way?
Yeah.
If you were the coach?
I would.
Absolutely. So what I'm saying, that's legislating against human dignity. But we can fly alumni with us all over the country. The NCAA has the finest hotels to stay at. They've got jets to haul themselves around. So I hope it changes. And I certainly... you can't just indict Mark Emery. He's probably made himself more visible and done more than anybody else. But the NCAA has been a dysfunctional group. That's why I gave them the name NCAA, not National Collegiate of Athletic Associations, not caring about athletes.
Coach, before we take a break for a final segment, I want to get your thoughts on this.
Don't tell me what you're going to say. I don't want to think about it.
The NCAA, during COVID, there's one thing I'd like to see them change is if you were coaching today, if you were coaching right now, Coach Brown, would you change your recruiting strategy to recruit closer to home, kids that are closer because of the way things have changed with distance, like we talked about with families being 1,000 miles away or, you know, 3,000 miles away. Would that change your recruiting approach?
Well, our recruiting approach was pretty well spread out. The two Final Fours, both our point guards, key cogs on our team, were both from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Right, right.
But also, we had some pretty good players from Texas, Shaquille O'Neal, Mississippi, Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, John Williams from California. So, no, I would, the tactics would be basically the same. If you can get, now, a lot of times also, you are in a situation, maybe you just need a point guard. Louisiana doesn't have a point guard. You got to go, that you think can play. Right. And I made as many mistakes as I did good things in recruiting. If I told you some of the guys I messed up on that didn't think could play, wound up playing, they wound up in the NBA. So it's, how do you know? They're young. Bigger guys have harder times, longer, takes longer time for them to adjust. Like, for example, here's a perfect example. Garrett Hommey sat on the bench all that time watching Shaquille.
One of my favorite players.
So I'm sure there were those that wondered, can he even play? Isn't it bizarre? After Shaquille went hardship, Garrett is now a senior. We won one more game with him as a center as we did Shaquille the year he left.
That was a great year from him, Coach. He had a great year.
Yeah,
I remember
he had a great year, became a first-round draft choice. So I don't believe I would change it at all. I just think it's recruiting is, you know, this is going to sound drippy to you and everything. Or for someone that doesn't know me, oh, well, what's he trying? That's just made up. But when I first went out to recruit, I was at Utah State. I didn't know anything about recruiting. And I thought, what in the world? How do you recruit, man? What do you do? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I know what probably some people are going to do. They're going to give them all kinds of enticements, putting women on campus. You might not have to go to class. We get to put you in this fake course, whatever happens. So I went in, I'm just going to be myself. And I told every parent that was there, I said, you know, I'm not trying to sound like Mr. Nice Guy here, mm-hmm. but I said, your son, my primary reason here is because he's a very good basketball player, but I'm here to recruit a human being first and a basketball player second. And I promise you, if you come send your son to LSU 25 years after he leaves, I'm lying because I've been gone longer. I'm still in touch with my players longer than 25 years. But then when I look at the player myself, how his performance was in a practice or in a game, or if I met him, I'd always think to myself, would I want him to babysit our young daughter? And I'm really proud. Now, if being a saint was a prerequisite for this job, I wouldn't have been the basketball coach, and I'm looking for someone that's going to be a canonized saint. That's not the point. But I was really blessed with really having really nice young man. 85% of them that stayed here 4 years have a degree. 65% of the 160, I think 103 of them, 103 of the 160 have a college degree.
That's good stuff.
So I've been really blessed with good young people that I love today like I did when I coached now.
Coach, we're going to take a break. When we come back, final segment, I'm going to give you my all-time basketball roster of 15 players.
Wow.
I'm going to do a roster of 15. You would love that. I'm going to do a starting five. My starting five going back
to
the beginning.
I love trivia like that.
And when we come back, let you promote your books. You've been an author of many books and promote everything you're doing, Coach, because I know we go all over the state and all over the country, and I want you to be able to do that. And we'll be right back. We've got Dale Brown as our guest. I'm Lee Burkine, your host. We'll be right back. So, hey, guys, just wanted to take a minute to tell you about Harvey Autos. If you need a new or used car, there's three great dealerships right here worth checking out. John Harvey Toyota, Harvey Subaru, and Lexus of Shreveport, Bossier City. Low prices, honest people, tell them Lee sent you. Welcome back. You're listening to the Sports Scouting Report. We have Dale Brown, ex-former legendary basketball coach LSU. Lee Burkine, your host. And in this segment, Coach, I want to give out my starting five. Now, this is just mine. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason, but here are mine.
This is just LSU starting five?
This is LSU starting five.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give the rest of the roster. I'm going to do like a roster of 15. So we'll count one maybe as a walk-on, but just say 15. Power forward, Bob Pettit. Shaquille O'Neal at center. 2-guard, Pistol Pete Maravich. Another guard, we'll go with a 3-guard offense, Ben Simmons. And then the final guard, I know him as Chris Jackson from when he was at LSU for you. How do you like that?
Wow.
How do you like that starting five?
Wow. That would be dynamite.
And here's the bench. Here's the guys coming off the bench. Greg Cookie, Man Cook, Howard Carter, Derek Taylor, Marcus Thornton, Garrett Temple, Glenn Davis, Stanley Roberts, John Williams, and Leonard Mitchell, and finally Jerry Reynolds. What do you think, Coach?
God, Don, does your wife know how smart you are?
Could anybody beat that team?
I tell you what, now that's just 10 of them, right?
That's 15 total.
Say, well, you got 15? I was counting, I thought it was 10. Okay, you left one player off.
Now, I got three guys. You'll love this. I got three guys I would say as alternates. Nikita Wilson as a forward, Ricky Blanton as a forward, and Skylar Mays as a guard.
Ooh, I love Skylar Mays. I think it's excellent. There's no way it's impossible to do it, but there's a player you left off that was really one of the best players I've ever coached at LSU.
Who's that?
You want to guess?
Oh, what position?
From the Midwest.
I know I'm going. This was off the top of my head when I did this while we were talking.
Glenn Hansen.
Who, Coach?
Glenn Hansen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He was a really good player. And, you know, Don Redden. There's some players that don't get to play in the NBA and don't get the publicity, but they do things that you never can ever thank them enough for. Yeah. Willie Sims. Best sixth man. He was the John Havlicek of college basketball, and I think he still might be. Never started, came off the bench.
Hey, so there was also Dwayne Scales that played for you, Brandon Bass.
Ooh, yeah.
Thomas came from McKinley at power forward. There's a lot of guys. And then we didn't – I left off one of my favorite players, Ethan Martin, point guard.
Oh, Ethan Martin was brilliant at point guard. Am I correct in this? Hasn't LSU basketball won more SEC championships than football?
Yes.
And I also believe, I'm not sure of this, but I think, doesn't LSU have the most players that were voted, LSU and Houston, and who was the third one, had the most players that made the memorable top 50 NBA players?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that's true, Coach, of all time.
For a school that doesn't really get publicity, you know.
Yeah, and you look at all the great players that have come out of Louisiana, you know, Karl Malone and, you know, Robert Parrish.
Yeah.
Robert Parrish,
yeah.
People forget, was from Louisiana and went to Centenary. I mean, there's just so much talent. And I do this, and I'm glad that we had you. I'm glad that you came on, Coach. I'm honored, as always. You know, I talk to you sometimes, but I'm glad that you took the time to be on my show. And because people –
Are you kidding? That was a pleasure to be on. And one final thing, you know, maybe I'm a little overly sensitive, but we love Baton Rouge and we love Louisiana, and I get so sick and tired. And I know there's flaws all over, but this is truly one of the great places to live. Now, can it be better? Yes. Would we like to see less crime? Yes. Would we like to see less debris on the street? Would we like to improve the traffic? But I'm talking about the people.
Yeah.
Let's forget the debris. Let's forget the overall, the people. I never have seen people that are more warmer and genuine than Louisianans.
And Coach, speaking of that, I'll take it. Because you like me, my brain starts when you say something. I think of something else. But think of Shreveport, Monroe, Lafayette, how they're so different, unique, and so nice people. New Orleans, the River Parishes, St. Tammany, Houma LaFouche. You know, it's just every unique town.
Like you're in different countries.
Yeah. And they're all unique in their own way. Lake Charles.
Yep.
You know, this, and you've recruited all those areas over the years. You know all those areas. And it's just everybody.
Plain Dealing, Louisiana. You ever been there?
It's by Shreveport. I've been there. Been through it. Yeah.
He will.
Yeah, I left him out. He was a good player. But, yeah, what about Spring Hill? You know, how about Natchitoches?
Wow.
You know, Natchitoches is a great community.
My grandson went to school there for 1 year.
Okay. You know, Sulphur, you know, by Lake Charles, Westlake, Louisiana.
I spoke in Sulphur, yeah. What was a football player from Sulphur played at LSU?
Well, it was a Westlake, was David LaFleur. So Westlake was the big name in that area. He was a first-round pick by the Dallas Cowboys at 6'7", 280. Coach, is that crazy? He could have played for you at one time, but he was 6'7", 280, a tight end. And Tommy Casanova, who, you know, came from a small town, Crowley.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of, and then, you know, obviously John Brady had coached, what, high school ball, basketball at Crowley.
Yeah.
And I heard Bill Walton talking in his game last night, the UCLA game last night with Arizona State. There's a kid from Crowley High School playing for Arizona State, and he spent 2 minutes talking about it. That's why I like Bill. He talked about the history of the kid, where he went to high school,
yeah,
and that he went to two other colleges to get to Arizona State. And people, like you said, that how deep he is, his vault of knowledge. I appreciate that stuff. But future basketball, Coach, before we go, what do you think college basketball, what path are we on for college basketball in 2021?
Well, first of all, let's talk about this year. Would they have played the basketball this year if it wasn't the fact there was money involved, even though they're not filling the arenas and et cetera, but still they get the television rights? Mm-hmm. Are they playing it for the kids or are they playing it for money? I don't know the answer to that. It's just a question. I think the situation is all through history, and I'm not trying to impress you with my intellect about being a historian, although I do love history.
You are.
From ancient times to you name all major catastrophes, the people that were creative didn't lose faith, stayed positive. Some of the greatest inventions occurred. Some of the greatest things that ever happened occurred because of tragedy. And so I hope this terrible, terrible everything, from the politics to the rioting at the nation's capital, the last thing I would ever see, to the burning down of businesses, to all the ugly stuff that's going on, we have to understand that we've got to be, it's very simple. You tell your team, the best potential of me is we. This ain't no I, it's my business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Rhodes Scholar, but TEAM, is there any I in that? Is there any I? Team isn't spelled T-I-M-E, is it? It's spelled P-E-M. There isn't any I in that. It's mm-hmm. a team. And so we've got to, our country's got to come together. I mean, there's so much, and the number of people that have anxieties and fears and are committing suicide. Last year alone, 1 million people in the world committed suicide.
Mm.
The drug overdoses. And the only thing more powerful, when you're fearful, everybody's fearful or gets an anxiety. The only thing more powerful than fear is the boldness of faith. So we have to, and I'm not talking about church, I'm talking about God and spirituality.
Right.
We've got to start. There was a book written 20 years ago by Judge Bork called Slouching Towards Gomorrah. He described in there exactly what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
Until we change, we've got to be the change we wish to see. We can't wish it on somebody else. We've got to do it. And I've been in 90 countries in the world. There isn't anything even close to the United States of America, even though right now it's been beaten up and split divisiveness, but the divisiveness has occurred from the very top. We've got to come back together. And I sometimes think the political world, if they were head coaches, they'd never win a game.
Mm.
They have players on the team turning against themselves. So this isn't some evangelistic talk I'm giving you.
Right.
It's just what I know from my heart.
Sports and life.
Not going to give up on it.
Yeah. Yeah, sports go hand in hand. People are playing sports. It's people.
Yeah.
Coach, I want you to be able to promote on Amazon or however somebody can order, but I know you've written many books. Do you want to promote any today or let anybody know?
I'm not an author. I can speak it, but when I write, I tear it up about 9,000 times. But I would say, I'm not getting any money out of this because I'm giving it to charity in the first place. But I would say in this particular time, if you really want a book that I think could help, is the one book that I've written is Getting Over the Four Hurdles of Life. Now, the publisher, by the way, is in Lafayette, Louisiana, Trent Angers.
Okay.
You can order online from that, or you can go to Tadiana Publishing Company and order it from him. I think that book would help. It discusses the four hurdles we have when we come out, when they snip our umbilical cords, we come out of that block, we're going to have to face four hurdles in life. You can't con your way over them. You can't barter your way over them. Mm-hmm. You can't con your way over them. You can't lie your way over them. You got to jump over them. You can't jump around them. You can't jump under them. You got to jump over them. The hurdle of number one we all have to get over is I can't, or being told you can't. Number two hurdle you have to get over is failure. No matter what you do,
right,
you're going to be able to fail.
Got
to learn.
And
so, you know, and then, but just the simple four hurdles of life, you know yourself. I think that book would really help, particularly now. And it's a simple book. It isn't 500 pages. You can sit down and read it in a day. I think that would help people.
Well, Coach Brown, again, from the bottom and top of my heart, sincerely, thank you for taking 50 minutes.
It's my pleasure, Lee. If just one person can profit from this morning, it was certainly worth that time with you.
Enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And don't hang up, Coach, because I'm going to talk to you right before you go to thank you again. But go to our website, LAFootballMagazine.com. We do stories, Coach Brown, on kids 3 days a week on our website anywhere in Louisiana. We randomly do small schools or big schools. But if you like reading about recruiting and helping kids, we promote the kids on our website, LAFootballMagazine.com. And, Coach, next Monday we have the head coach of Santa Mall High School is going to be joining us, Coach David Oliver, and also from Glenbrook High School. That's a school up around Minden, Louisiana, Coach. We've got their head coach, David Feaster, joining us next Friday. But we'll talk to you soon. Everybody have a great weekend.
Before you leave, may I say something?
Definitely, Coach.
Quickly, for all your high school coaches that you associate with, one day, sitting in John Wooden's little modest apartment, we're talking about coaching, and he said, you know, Dale, he said, I sincerely believe the best coaching occurs on the high school ranks. And you want to know what? There's a lot of great high school coaches. Now, they don't have delusions of grandeur. Some of them don't want to coach.
Yeah.
But there's really a lot of truth in that. High school coaches do so much. And they certainly don't make it in salaries. And some of them don't want to be. Some of them don't want to be college or pro coaches, but thank God for the high school and junior high school and those young men that work with people.
Well, I ditto that, Coach. I'll second that. They're wonderful people. It takes a special person to make a living doing something you love to help these young men and women while they're in school and be like surrogate parents to them.
And
a lot of these guys, they're thanked when they go on the Hall of Fames. And that's what makes me tear up when they bring
I don't think I could live to be. I don't think I could outlive Methuselah, who's supposed to live to be 969, and be more grateful. What I learned through athletics was that, number one, it was a father substitute for me. I had no male figure in my house. Number two, I learned to get a good self-image. I had an inferiority complex growing up on welfare, clothes that smelled of mothballs. Mm-hmm. And three, I learned teamwork, that you're not going to do anything unless you can get it together as a team. And four, perseverance. If you do those four things, that's what I learned in high school and junior. I started in the fifth grade, and I'm sure grateful to everybody that touched my life, those coaches.
Well, just like the late Jim Valvano said, Coach, don't ever give up, whether it's fighting cancer or whether it's fighting, trying to understand or trying to mold yourself, like you said, as a young man or woman in this world. But my mom, you mentioned MD Anderson earlier. My mom goes to MD Anderson, and the reason she's here 8 years later fighting cancer is because you just don't give up. But, Coach, again, thank you. Don't hang up. We'll see you next week, guys. We'll see you. Everybody have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Scouting Report podcast with Lee Brekeen.